This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
Foreign buyers lose appetite for U.S. Treasury debt.
It's not that we've seen foreign buyers just dumping treasuries. There's this narrative sometime in the market that China and Japan are dumping their treasury holdings. That's not really what's happening. They're kind of letting them run down slowly.
And a succession rift threatens the Estee Lauder beauty empire. Plus, Ford and Stellantis workers back labor deals, bringing a tense round of negotiations with Detroit carmakers one step closer to wrapping up. It's Friday, November 17th. I'm Pierre Bien-Aimé for The Wall Street Journal, covering for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that move the world today. OpenAI co-founder Sam Altman is out as chief executive of the company behind ChatGPT. The artificial intelligence company said in a blog post that its board found Altman wasn't being, quote, consistently candid in his communications, and that it had lost confidence in his ability to continue leading the company. Further details weren't immediately available. Mira Murati, the company's chief technology officer, will serve as interim CEO effective immediately. Altman co-founded OpenAI 8 years ago and has been seen as a driver of the artificial intelligence revolution. OpenAI went from small nonprofit to multi-billion dollar company at near record speed, thanks in part to the launch of a for-profit arm that allowed it to raise money from backers like Microsoft. ChatGPT, the chatbot with the ability to produce human-like writing, has become one of the most viral products in the history of technology. Foreigners aren't buying U.S. government debt like they used to. Overseas private investors and central banks now own about 30% of all the outstanding U.S. government debt. That's down from roughly 43% a decade ago, according to data from the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association. Markets reporter Chelsea Delaney joins me now to discuss this drying up demand. Chelsea, why are investors moving away from U.S. debt?
Well, this is a trend that's been underway for quite a while, and there are two big buyers of U.S. government debt that have, for idiosyncratic reasons, kind of stepped away from the market. That's Japan and China. They're still the two largest foreign holders of U.S. government debt, but both of them are seeing a lot of pressure on their currencies because of the strength of the dollar. And one of the things you do when you have currency under pressure is you sell your treasuries and use that money to buy your own currency. So that's been one of the reasons why as well. There are a lot of other things you can buy in the U.S. market. You can buy mortgage-backed security bonds. You can buy corporate bonds. And we've seen, for example, in Japan, them doing that as well.
And what does this change in the demand? What does it mean for the U.S. government?
This definitely comes at a bad time for the U.S. government. The U.S. government is running really large deficits, and to cover that deficit, they have to issue a lot of bonds. So this year already, they've issued about $2 trillion net securities. That's going to probably be the second largest ever after the 2020 debt binge. And so that supply wall is hitting this kind of lackluster demand from foreign investors, and that means that there's less buying and the price is going to go down, and the yield that the government has to pay is going to go up. And that's what we've seen.
So what does this mean, this less foreign buying? What does it mean for the average American?
Well, for the average American, it could potentially be a good thing because we've seen a lot of demand for treasuries from, you know, everyday investors in the U.S. And this is kind of a new trend where average people are buying U.S. treasuries because they are starting to return a lot more. So the fact that foreigners are not so interested, it means that U.S. investors might get a better deal when they buy treasuries.
Is the U.S. Treasury taking any action to address this change in demand?
They have. The supply-demand imbalance is something that's definitely top of mind for the Treasury and for Washington. So they have been adjusting some of the issuance plans they have. So right now, there's a lot of weakness in demand for these really long dated bonds, like a 30-year bond, there's not a lot of demand for that. So they are moving more towards shorter term bills or shorter term bonds that these domestic investors in the US seem to like more. So they definitely are trying to adjust their plans to meet what demand there is in the market.
That was markets reporter Chelsea Delaney joining me from London. Coming up, how a succession rift threatens the Estee Lauder beauty empire, as the founding family and board argue over the company's direction. More after the break.
This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foresight Fund Services, LLC.
The United Auto Workers Union has secured worker backing for new labor contracts at all three Detroit automakers. That puts negotiations between the two sides one step closer to resolution. The UAW hasn't shared official results, but preliminary figures show a majority of workers at both Ford Motor and Stellantis, which owns Chrysler, have voted in favor of the proposed agreements. The new four-and-a-half-year pact covers tens of thousands of workers at both companies. It includes a 25% base wage increase over the life of the contract and, for the first time, the right to strike over plant closures. The UAW, Ford, and Stellantis declined to comment. Amazon is cutting several hundred positions related to its Alexa Smart Assistant in the U.S., Canada, and India. In a memo to employees today, the company said it's shifting some of its efforts toward generative AI to better align with its business priorities. It also said it's looking to reduce headcount in other regions. Moving on, the Estee Lauder family has built a beauty empire. Now, as we exclusively report, a rift over succession threatens it. The company's shares have plunged about 50% this year, erasing roughly $45 billion in market value. And the founding family and board are divided over what to do about it. Sabella Ojea reported on the beauty business's deliberations, and she joins me now. Sabella, what's going on at Estee Lauder?
The problem is that Estee Lauder has been focused on its China expansion heavily over the past few years. Fabrizio Freda, the CEO, he still believes that that's the right strategy, but the truth is that the recovery from the pandemic is being much slower than the company expected. And at the same time, in the U.S., which is the company's home market, Estee Lauder is facing a tough reality, which is that the business landscape has evolved very much in the past few years. Consumers are very focused on innovation. They want new products. They like to use TikTok. And Estee Lauder was late at embracing these trends.
So within this family, which together they control over 80% of the voting power, what are the different strategic kind of conflicts or competing visions for the company?
Leonard Lauder, who is the emeritus chairman and who is also 90 years old, he's got a very different perspective on how the company should operate its brands. He believes that the key to having a luxury business is based on being present at department stores and really investing in this strategy. At the same time, the current CEO, Fabrizio Freda, and Leonard's son, who is the executive chairman, William, they believe that the future and the present of the business should be based on stores like Sephora and Ulta Beauty and also on Amazon, which has been a huge problem for the company since Leonard is very much against that idea. But who knows what will happen? As you mentioned, the stock has plunged by 50% since the beginning of the year. And investors are asking more questions. And obviously, the board cannot just like ignore these questions.
Wall Street Journal breaking financial news reporter Sabella Ojea. The U.S. government is preparing the latest version of its dietary guidelines, which advise Americans on which types of food to eat and how much. And for the first time, it's asking its scientific advisory committee to consider how diets consisting of varying amounts of ultra-processed foods influence body composition and obesity risk. Ultra-processed foods make up a majority of Americans' diets, about 58% of the calories consumed by adults and children aged 1 and older, according to an analysis of federal data collected from 2001 to 2018. Andrea Peterson writes about consumer health for the Wall Street Journal, and she joins me now. Andrea, what is an ultra-processed food anyway?
So there's no universally agreed upon definition of what makes an ultra-processed food. That said, there is a classification system that actually was created by researchers in Brazil that basically the whole kind of nutrition science community has really adopted. Most ultra-processed foods have some sort of engineering involved. And to make them, companies generally, they break down whole foods and chemically modify them to create ingredients that you wouldn't find in nature. So something like soy protein isolate, which is derived from soybeans, or maltodextrin, which is a sweetener that's derived from corn or other grains. Also, many ultra-processed foods include what one of the co-creators of the system calls cosmetic additives, basically things that enhance a food's flavor, color, or texture. And the thing is that a lot of them are things that, you know, we probably consider as relatively healthy. Most breakfast cereals, soups, yogurts, granola bars, I mean, a lot of those are ultra-processed.
And why are we worried about consuming such foods?
So there's been actually quite a bit of recent research that have linked diets high in ultra-processed foods to increased risks of a range of health problems, including obesity, type 2 diabetes, cancer, cardiovascular disease, and even depression.
And what's the food industry saying about that?
The food industry is really coming out swinging because they're worried about there being some sort of recommendations for limits on ultra-processed foods. And their main argument is one that actually a lot of scientists agree with as well, that ultra-processed foods are not a monolithic category, that some companies are saying that their foods actually have a lot of health attributes and that they don't want to be kind of lumped in with foods that maybe are more blatantly unhealthy. The thing is that scientists are still really trying to understand what it is about these ultra-processed foods that seem to be linked to the health issues.
That was Wall Street Journal consumer health reporter Andrea Peterson. And finally, the most powerful supercomputer in the world is coming to life on the outskirts of Chicago. Aurora, as it's called, is housed at the Energy Department's Argonne National Laboratory, where it takes 2 tennis courts worth of space and weighs 600 tons. With all of that muscle, it aims to perform 2 quintillion operations in the space of a single second. That's 2 billion billion operations. Reporter Scott Patterson says the computer will work in tandem with artificial intelligence and automated labs equipped with robotics.
It's going to be able to do tests on real live stuff and then take back what it learns and then do more tests. And it'll be able to do this autonomously. So it could potentially, with the goals that the researchers give it, new battery materials, pharmaceuticals, military applications, come up with new combinations that never had been thought of before.
Built by Intel and Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, Aurora is slowly being turned on rack by rack. It's expected to become fully operational next year. And that's what's news for this week. Today's show was produced by Anthony Bansi. What's News is hosted by Anne-Marie Fertoli and Luke Vargas, with guest hosting today by me, Pierre Bien-Aimé. Additional support this week from Daniel Bach and Christina Roca. Our supervising producers are Sandra Kilhoff and Michael Kosmides. Aisha Al-Muslim is our development producer. Scott Salloway and Chris Sinsley are our deputy editors. And Falana Patterson is the Wall Street Journal's head of news audio. We'll be back with a new show on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.